Welcome to Worlds Apart. Legend has it that back in the Cold War days, The Art of War by the great Chinese strategist Sun Tzu was a must-read both for the training KGB officers and for the American military personnel, especially the part about making the enemy take your strengths for weaknesses and vice versa. As Russia and the West hover on the brink of a direct confrontation in and over Ukraine, what strategy would China choose? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Yiwei Wong, Director of the Center for European Studies at Renmin University of China. Professor Wong, it's great to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me here.
Now, you heard that in my introduction, I mentioned Sun Tzu, whose teachings focused a lot on maximizing your tactical and strategic position while also avoiding a direct clash. And I think the Russians for some time tried to implement that strategy with a NATO enlargement, but by now they have clearly concluded that nothing but direct kinetic force would be effective. In your view, do you think this clash, this use of military force was inevitable, or there was still some room for diplomatic or peaceful solving of the problem?
Of course, I think the negotiation or the diplomatic solution should be on the two tracks. The first track is Russia and Ukraine, ceasefire, humanitarian crisis, or how to deal with Russia's requirement should be, I think the positive response from Ukraine's side, that neutralization of Ukraine and the denazification and Crimea, whatever, this is a full set. Mm-hmm. Second track, need to negotiate in the future, that is all the whole arrangement in the European security. The European security should be on the Europeans' hands, including Russians. So I also very happy to hear from the European side that European security should cannot bypass Moscow and also cannot target Moscow. Mm-hmm. So European security not allowed the NATO, which the U.S. Hegemonic tour to bash Russia, not give respect to Russia's security consideration. That's the tragedy happened.
Now, Professor Wong, in your analysis, you suggested that the crisis surrounding Ukraine is a response to the U.S. and the West's disrespect for Russia's security interests. And I think many in Moscow would agree on that point. But military action, even on a limited scale, is the worst possible solution. This whole crisis and its implications with casualties and refugees and sanctions and the destruction of infrastructure, the disruption of global financial and commodity markets. Isn't that also a result of Russia being too patient or too restrained for way too long? Had it acted earlier, don't you think that some of the damage could have been avoided?
Firstly, Chinese position is very clear. All the countries' sovereignty and territorial integrity should be respected, United Nations Charter. But the nation should be fully independent, should be a sovereign state. Some countries, they are actually in the name of the sovereignty, equality, but they are maybe influenced too much by external force. So they're just used by external and financial military power to bargain or even the sacrifice those countries. That's the tragedy. So we should blame with the true reason why this tragedy happened. Of course, any war, any sanctions is not welcome, but why this happened? So that's Chinese position very clearly. And secondly, I think the Western mentality should be rethinking about, if they learn anything from the Asian, the Chinese civilization like Yi Jin, in Chinese, we say "kang long yu hui." So you cannot go to too extreme. Not a NATO expansion, not 30 countries. You need the border zone. You need respect the Russian, like the Korean Peninsula. They are 38 degrees, right? This is the Korean War that China joined, right? It could be balanced. So Korean, I think experience should be learned to, you know, Ukraine and to other European countries.
Do I understand you correctly? And let me know if I do not understand you correctly, that one of the reasons for this crisis, sort of the one of the setups for this crisis is the Western use of countries as their proxies, as proxies to implement their own policies.
Definitely, particularly for the U.S., you know, President Biden even said that February 16 is the war will break out or something. So how they know about the date of the what happened? Why you will not prevent yourself from this happening? Because the U.S. need this war. The U.S. need this war to sell their inflation to for the dollars. So U.S. power is more on the U.S. dollar hegemonic thinking. They need this crisis of war and then to sanctions to Russia. It's also the test to next year, maybe sanctions to China.
Mm-hmm. Now, can I ask you about China? Because China has taken its own position in this conflict. It's not supporting either side, but it's also not ignoring the broader geopolitical context that set those events in motion. You mentioned NATO's enlargement. What do you think Beijing is most concerned about when it looks at the situation in Ukraine?
The Beijing very concerned about Ukraine situation. We have very good relations with Russia, but with the Ukraine in the past also quite good. But the current government, they're not kept balanced. So it's unfortunately make these you know, challenges happen from that. And China, Europe, rail express pass through Ukraine, or mostly they should pass through Russia. So the sanctions make this very worse situation. Also, for the food price, for the inflation, oil price, everything. China pay a lot of price for that. This is unfortunately. Our students, our overseas Chinese, and the business, everywhere. So even U.S. warning to sanction to Chinese company if we support Russia. This is illegal sanctions, and make China pay the cost. This definitely cannot be accepted.
I have many more questions about sanctions, but before I ask them, let me ask you a question about geopolitical implications, because the international system as we knew it is no more, not only because of the sanctions and the rising commodity prices, but also because Russia allowed itself to break certain rules that it had previously defended. And whether we like it or not, it would have certain implications for the international system. How do you think the world will change as a result of this conflict? Do you think other countries would now present themselves differently and use different methods to defend their interests?
I think we need to think about a new world order. The traditional world order actually destroyed by the capitalists. Now even by the U.S., the thing about this order benefited China too much, make China rush. So U.S. Target is not Russia. The real target is China. We understand this. So it's just a test in the Ukraine for the sanctions enforced. Even Switzerland, the permanent neutral state, to join the sanctions, totally changed the Westphalia system, not just a U.N.-centric international system. This is China very worried about that. So if we destroy the traditional system, what are the new systems will come out? It's more in a chaos, and everybody will suffer from that. Mm-hmm. The U.S. will solve the problem of the domestic trouble, but destroy these systems, huge problem for the U.S. in the future also be faced.
Mm-hmm. Now, China's President Xi Jinping spoke on a number of occasions about the common ship of humanity on which our shared destiny hinges, and he spoke in favor of preserving the global system of free and fair trade. And this is pretty understandable. I mean, China is much better integrated into that system than, let's say, Russia. It also reaped a lot of benefits, I think deserved benefits. But in a way, Russia's actions go against China's interests because it helps to disintegrate the system even further. I wonder if China will be now trying to preserve whatever is left of the old trade system, you know, global production chains, or will it change its calculus and try to shape a new system?
Well, traditional Chinese wisdom is not just to build an alternative system. Actually, the cost is very high. China understands, even our GDP maybe now 90% of the U.S., but we still on the U.S.-led system. Difficult to build another system. We learned from the collapse of the Soviet Union that to build an alternative system, internet system, the cost is very high. So we need a more inclusive or integrated system. The U.S., whether they build a new system to replace the previous one, Chinese wisdom is to build a more mutually connective to make the either the old one or the new one, U.S., like Indo-Pacific, whatever meaning, to be really connected, benefit to the people, centric.
Okay. Now, let's talk about the sanctions. You mentioned already that the U.S. Department of Commerce already warned that Chinese companies may be penalized, may be sanctioned if they don't join the American ban on the export of energy and raw materials from Russia. How do you think Chinese companies will react to that? How would they play along with this?
Fortunately, the sanctions are not authorized by the United Nations. So it's, we cannot say it's just on the U.S. domestic law. China, we also have the similar law, Caucasian law. So if Chinese companies, their legal rights be undermined by any external forces, the China also should protect their legal interests. So I think that's we should do that. Secondly, international legal system should be respected. So I think according to the commercial principle, this is still global. Globalization. So China's business with Russia, everything according to the traditional the rule-based international order, benefited to the both sides. Why we should pay the cost for the U.S. What's the behavior?
But Professor Wong, you know that there are certain rules and laws in this world, and yet when the United States wants, it has enough influence to circumvent that. If it puts pressure on the Chinese companies, even illegally, don't you think that those companies will succumb for the sake of continuing to do their business?
Firstly, China, of course, not openly, publicly challenged the U.S. Hegemonic power. We understand that U.S. have so many leverage to punish, like Meng Wanzhou, the Huawei case, and remind us, even Afghanistan, China needs support of Afghanistan, but because the Taliban still be sanctioned by the U.S. government, so very sensitive to that. However, Chinese private companies, they have the wisdom to bypass of that. China is now is very dynamic and very... I think they're smart enough to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, Professor Wong, we have to take a very short break right now, but we will be back in just a few moments. Stay tuned.
So what we've got to do is identify the threats that we have.
It's crazy.
Confrontation, let it be an arms race.
Who is on offense? Very dramatic development.
I personally am going to resist.
I don't see how that strategy will be successful.
Very critical time.
Time to sit down and talk.
Welcome Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Yiwei Wang, Director of the Center for European Studies at the Renmin University of China. Professor Wang, before the break, we're talking about various implications of this crisis and the fact that the US hegemony, to a large extent, is based on the status of the dollar as the world's top reserve currency, which gives the Americans a lot of, some would say, undue control and leverage. Given the decision by both Visa and MasterCard to limit their operations in Russia and the subsequent rush of the Russian banks towards the China-controlled UnionPay, what do you think it would mean for the global financial system and for the, you know, financial balance of power?
Well, it's always a dilemma. We cannot view either positive or negative. Everything's from both sides, a double-edged sword, like sanctions and crisis, meaning in Chinese, crisis means opportunities and challenges always comes from. China, maybe this time, the Russians are more use of their chip system, not just SWIFT, because they blocked. However, this is just a bilateral meaning. SWIFT system is global. So China, we need support of Russia. We have our legal rights to do that. We are very close friends. But to be frankly, Russia's position in the world, there are many challenges which China cannot replace to do.
Absolutely. I also hear from some of the analysts here in Moscow that you know, despite this sweeping use of sanctions, Beijing cannot fully abandon Moscow because it would need Russia's support for its own confrontation with the West. And according to some Russian analysts, this clash with the West, not necessarily military clash, but, you know, some direct confrontation over national interest is not too far off. What do you think about that?
Well, yeah, U.S. watch very closely to China. Not Ukraine, but Taiwan, you know, as I said, maybe it's a test of the sanctions or the response for the international community. They even enforce North Switzerland and ASEAN, you know, to join these sanctions. Actually, it's a test of the Indo-Pacific strategy, whatever, decouple with China, but difficult for the U.S. to reach the goal. Because the U.S. strategy, they're never, you know, consulting with the others. They respect other interests. They're only from their own perspective and their interests, not respect, not much of the inclusive. Mm-hmm. And also, Americans' problem is domestically. They have so many divided politically, economically. So maybe 2 years later, Trump will come back, or the so-called shrinking middle class. So U.S. strategy cannot be long-term, so many domestic challenges. So China's approach, I think, is we think about it around long-term. We are not because of this and then take opportunity to do that or to do that, which U.S. will be more eager to do that. Mm-hmm. China, we have 5,000 years. We are not eager to like integrate with Taiwan or unification, whatever. So we, of course, need Russians' help. Russians can share many experience because you feel their sanctions, you feel the pressure from the West so many years. You are a real power. You are very independent. So we, China's of course, want to learn more from Russia.
Look, we have spoken enough about the Russians and the Americans. Let me ask you about Europe, because Europe is a crucial market for China. And I know that before these developments in Ukraine, there was a lot of concern in China about the Americans trying to drive a wedge between China and Europe. Do you think this crisis may sort of alleviate this threat? Do you think Europe can afford to burn most of its bridges with Russia, as it has already done, and still be on the path of decreasing its reliance on China? Will it not have to choose between one or the other at this point?
Well, as a Yamani chair professor of the European Union, I, of course, understand the dilemma of the European Union, or in general, Europe. Energy depends on Russia, security depends on US, now market maybe depends on China. So always a dilemma of that. So the strategic autonomy is a long way to go. But however, this situation actually, not just a wake-up call, this fundamentally changed the European Union. Not too much naive to rely on the US, NATO. The need, the European security should be on the hands of the Europeans. Mm-hmm. So Merkel always said that, but of course take a long time because you don't have your search engine. You just use the Google. not like China and Russia, we have our own search engine. Mm-hmm. So digitalization period, difficult for you, even military industrial complex, too much enforced by our external forces, by the US. So China definitely support our independence of Europe, and then the multipolar world to be coming to force.
Now, this conflict, this standoff also has a nuclear aspect to it, and the U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin in his recent interview suggested that any rhetoric of using nuclear weapons is dangerous, that it should be avoided, but it didn't prevent the American officials themselves from bringing up this threat. How significant is the nuclear factor in this whole drama?
Yes, it's a very dangerous situation. You know, the AUKUS, the U.S. make Australia to be nuclearized in a nuclear submarine. It's violated with a nuclear-free zone in the Pacific, in the South Pacific and that area. And also encourage like the use of the military forces against Iraq or the make North Korea and other countries you go nuclear. But this time, maybe more countries will apply to join NATO and more countries seek the nuclear weapons. Maybe it's a very dangerous. So U.S. is sometimes made the bad example to promote this, unfortunately.
Now, we discussed many aspects of this standoff. Let us take on the informational and psychological aspect as well, because I don't think we have ever used, we have ever seen the use of the tools of cognitive warfare on such a level. And cognitive warfare is something that NATO, over the last couple of years, talked a lot about, you know, trying to affect public opinion in a foreign country to achieve their own goals, and we have seen lots of fakes, lots of misinformation, lots of open lying, to be honest with you. The Russian president even called the West in this standoff the Empire of Lies, because they say something that could be easily proven as false, and yet they're using it nonetheless. What's your assessment of this info war? Do you think we have ever seen it being waged on such a level, on such a scale?
Everything double-edged sword. Internet hegemonic power now help the U.S. to make so many disinformation, you know, even color revolution in Ukraine, now maybe everywhere, even they want to do that in Russia. And however, the U.S. giant of the ICT companies, they're not necessary for the U.S. companies, U.S. government. So they have their own interests. You know, the Musk once sold the satellite with the chains to Ukraine, and then so those companies, they need, they're really like an empire. So U.S. even in the name of the so-called democracy or the summit or whatever, but they're really colonized mm-hmm. in a digital civilization period. Mm-hmm. That's even Europe. Very worried about that. China also worried about that.
Well, China is arguably better prepared for it than most other countries, because your segment of the internet is more insulated from malicious foreign influence than other countries. And I think many actors are now looking into the Chinese experience of sort of securing your web space. Do you think the methods, the reasoning, the technologies that China has used to secure its web space, is it applicable? Are those applicable to other countries as well?
It's a dilemma for China. If we can open all the internet to the US, of course, increase the Chinese power in the of discourse. So many we have 10 billion netizens, right? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they undermine our state security, Communist Party's leadership. So this is always a dilemma for China. So the Ukraine situation now is a very controversial hot debate in China. Many people pro the U.S. even against the so-called Russians behavior, but the government, the majority is maybe felt sympathy to Russia. So it's also a very controversial, very conflict situation in Chinese media, especially in the internet, so which China's government is difficult to manage and even control in totally.
Now, can I ask you about the implications of this conflict for the Taiwan issue? Because this is something that Western analysts are now paying a lot of attention to, and they are afraid that whatever Russia does in Ukraine may inspire China to take its own action with regards to Taiwan. What do you think about that?
During that time, I popped an article in the Global Times said, because during that time, many Chinese said, oh, Russia can take Crimea, why not China take Taiwan? I said that Chinese foreign policy cannot follow Russia. Even we take Russians as a big brother, we learn a lot from Soviet Union and Russia. So different culturally, different situation. And Chinese, you know, economic more integrate with the globalization. So if the sanctions happened in China, China pay more, you know, cost than Russia, definitely. And the China thing about Taiwan is our domestic issue. It's not like Ukraine and Russia is two countries. So we have our own long-term agenda. We have our own, you know, I think maybe peaceful unification system, one country, two systems, whatever, to consult with Taiwanese.
Professor Wong, but speaking about your long-term agenda, just last Saturday, the Chinese government published an annual report which includes a commitment to solve the Taiwan issue, quote, in the modern era. How would you define this modern era? What is the timescale here? And what needs to be solved as far as the Taiwan issue is concerned?
The U.S., of course, play the card of Taiwan. The thing about the traditional way, whether decouple, trade war, whatever, cannot stop the rising of China. So China will sooner or later, very soon maybe, catch up with U.S. in the GDP, everywhere. So only thing they can do is make China to use force in Taiwan and then make the global sanctions to isolate China, is real decouple will be happened. Mm-hmm. So as I said, maybe this Ukraine cases is just a test for the U.S. to target of China. So China, of course, be patient and not follow that kind of track.
Mm-hmm. Well, you speak about huge costs that the Americans may impose on China for any action in Taiwan, but there are some analysts who suggest that the American sanction potential has now been exhausted. Do you think the Americans can afford to impose these sweeping sanctions on Russia and on China at the same time? I'm just speaking in hypothetical terms. Do you think there is a capacity on the part of the Americans to continue exhorting their pressure?
Americans are very difficult to do that because Chinese companies are very globalized. They have many U.S. You know, investment, and it's not a pure Chinese companies. So how do you sanction and also our trade, this is for normal. It's not violent any of the law. Why you can sanction to China? So if you abuse your power or sanctions and sanctions, you also damage your reputation. You will destroy the U.S. system.
Now, military action is the worst possible action of all, but there are other ways of exerting or expanding influence. And I know that Taiwan is home to the world's second largest base for production of electronic processors. It's absolutely vital for the development of global technology, which is one of the pillars of Western economic and political dominance. I wonder if having control over such companies, be it UMC or TSMC, is that something that China would aspire to?
Well, Chairman Mao said before, any sanctions, make China will be fully independent. So the U.S. maybe short term make China in trouble, like semiconductor chips and TSMC, whatever, Meng Wanzhou case or Huawei. But in the end, we'll make China more independent.
Okay.
We have, as I said, 1 billion netizens. So we have so many huge market. I think sooner or later, China will be catch up with in this high technology with US.
Okay. Well, Professor Wong, we have to leave it there. I greatly appreciate your analysis today. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for watching. Hope to see you again next week on Worlds Apart. We'll be right back.